Hey everybody, welcome to ESC216, characterization testing of nanotechnology structures and materials. I'm Hamed Simchi, the postdoctoral scholar at Penn State University, and today I'm gonna talk about X-ray photoelectron spectroscopy, or XPS. So as an outline, first I'm gonna talk about basic principles of XPS analysis. Then we go through the instrumentation required for the XPS characterization. Then we talk about the peaks characteristics and quantitative analysis. And at the end, we wrap up our talk with some data about the depth profiling that can be done in the XPS analysis. So just to have a brief introduction to the X-ray photoelectron spectroscopy, has been also known as the electron spectroscopy for chemical analysis, or ESCA, and it's been used for many years to determine the quantitative atomic composition and chemistry of different materials. So how it works is basically to irradiate sample with a monochromatic X-ray. It results in emission of photoelectrons with defined energies, which are characteristics of that element in the sample. And then an XPS spectra is created by plotting the number of electrons versus the binding energies. To have a brief history on the XPS, it's been invented by Kay Sieben in the Uppsala University in Sweden. And he actually won the Nobel Prize for Physics in 1981 for his work on the XPS. And since he was a physicist, he chose to call his method electron spectroscopy for chemical analysis, or ESCA, because he understood that the importance of chemical information that XPS or ESCA can provide in the materials analysis. So if we want to have some basic ideas on how the X-ray photoelectron spectroscopy works, it's actually based on the Einstein photoelectric effect, meaning that many materials emit electrons when light shines upon them. And as the graph on the bottom right shows, when we hit the sample with high energy photons, we can knock out the electrons out of the sample. And then these core electrons with a specific kinetic energy will be detected, and we measure their kinetic energy. And when we use that simple equation, we can find their binding energy. So in that equation, the K is the kinetic energy, H nu is the energy of the X-ray beam, and phi is the spectrometer work function. By having all of those values, we can measure the binding energy for a specific sample. So what we do is we hit the monochromated X-ray beam on the surface of the sample, and then because of the absorption of the incident X-rays, some electrons will be ejected from the sample, and those electrons will be measured by the detectors, and we can identify their energy levels. And this slide shows all the elements required in the XPS system. We first need a focused ion beam with high energy to hit the surface of the sample. Then those electrons, which will be ejected, go to the electron energy analyzer, and then they will be filtered in different energy levels, and the electron detector will collect those, and the computer system will gather the data for further analysis. And this slide shows the same idea, but in more details. As you can see, there are electrons sitting in different orbital levels. So when an X-ray beam hits a sample, there are electrons being ejected from different orbital levels. So in this case, for example, we had a pure copper sample. And as the plot on the top shows, different electrons coming from different orbitals have different binding energies. For example, 2s, 2p, 3s, 3p, and so on. And based on those, we can not only identify the unknown materials, but also can find the chemical states and oxidation states of these materials We'll get back into that in the next few slides. So for the X-bass analysis, we can say that each atom has a unique X-bass spectra, and we can use the X-bass analysis to determine the elemental composition, stoichiometry, electrical or chemical states, and also find if there is any surface contamination present on the surface. And X-bass analysis is a very unique technique in the fact that it provides not only the elemental composition of the sample, but it can also provide the chemical states information of the detected elements. So, for example, we can distinguish between the sulfate and the sulfide or different oxidation states in the sample. That's the unique properties of X-bass analysis. So, before going to further details, first we need to define some basic parameters for the X-bass analysis. The first factor is the inelastic mean free pass or lambda. If you assume we have a bunch of electrons with kinetic energy E, which are moving through a solid matrix M, they will have a probability of traveling a certain distance before losing all or part of their energies due to the inelastic collision. So the average distance traveled before such a collision is known as the inelastic mean free pass or lambda. And as the graph shows, it's a function of the energy of these electrons. Since in the X-bass analysis, we used the energy range of typically in the range of 50 and 1200 electron volt. As you can see on the graph, the lambda values are very small, corresponding to only a few monolayers. So what does it mean is that the photoelectrons must be originated from the atomic layers very, very close to the surface to be detected. Otherwise, it will be lost in the matrix. So that's what actually makes the X-bass technique very surface specific because of that short inelastic mean free pass. So by talking about the surface, first we need to understand what the surface means. So by talking about the surface, we are considering only a few atomic layers of 1 or 2 nanometers on the surface. So by using the X-bass, we can analyze the surface and ultra-thin films. We can also have angle resolved X-bass to change the penetration depths of X-ray beam a little to go a bit further. But for thicker films like 100 nano or micron range or even the bulk, we can still use XPS to find the data, but it's somehow a time-consuming process because we need to have the XPS spectrum collected in combination with the spotter etching. So we basically spotter etch layer by layer and collect the data, and then we can gather all info to have the elemental distribution, for example, or the chemical analysis through the whole field. So to summarize the first part, we talked about the X-bass as a tool to measure the elemental composition of the very top surface layers, only a few nanometers. We can extract the empirical formula for the pure materials. We can find if there are any surface contaminations on the sample. We can also have some info about the chemical or electronic states of each element at the surface. And for the some of the new instruments, we can also have some info about the uniformity of the elemental distribution across the top surface by doing line profiling or mapping. And if we have the ion beam etching compromised in the system, we can also have the uniformity of elemental composition as a function of the depths. And the basic idea is to hit the sample with the X-ray beam, generate the photoelectrons, and then analyze those energy levels with the electron energy analyzer. So for the next part, I'm going to talk about some instrumentation required in the X-bass analysis. So each X-bass instrument has basically four major parts. The first one is the ultra-high vacuum system. Second one is the X-ray source. Then we need to have an electron analyzer to collect the data. And if required, we also need to have an ion gun to do the spotter etching and surface cleaning. So the first part is the ultra-high vacuum system. We need to have a very high vacuum environment because it's first of all allows a longer photoelectron path length, so the photoelectrons being generated can be collected to the detector, and also it can keep the surface clean, preventing the contaminations to contribute in the X-ray signals. So by ultra-high vacuum, we mean in the pressure range of 10 to the minus 8 torr or below. And in order to reach that, we need to apply several vacuum pumps. First, we need to have a roughing pump to get to the low vacuums. Then the turbo pump will go to mid vacuum or high vacuum levels. And then at the end, the ion gauge pump will provide the ultra-high vacuum level required for the X-based analysis. The second component is the X-ray source. Most of the system have a dual anode X-ray source. Both aluminum and magnesium X-ray source are provided to have a different X-ray beam. In some cases that we have some complicated samples or some literature values are based on either of these cases, we need to compare those energy levels. So, and as the schematic graph on the top right shows, we have an anode under the high energy, and the electron beam coming from the filament hits the anode and then generates the X-ray. But after that, we need to use a quartz crystal to have the X-ray beam monochromated to have a specific certain energy before hitting the sample. And on the bottom right, you can see one of the modern X-ray beam sources being used in the new instruments. The next part is the electron analyzer. When we hit the sample with the X-ray beam generating the photoelectrons, we need to collect and distinguish those electron energy levels. First of all, we need to have a several lens system to define the area and do the energy adjustment. Then the electrons will go to a hemispherical energy analyzer, which is covered with magnetic shields. The energy of those electrons will be filtered to different levels, and then the detector will collect those, and the computer system will gather the data for us. And the last part would be the ion gun. First of all, we need the ion gun to do some sample cleaning. Even though the sample is sitting in the, under the ultra-high vacuum, but during the transfer or sample preparation, we might have some contamination on the surface, or it may absorb moisture or other organic molecules from the lab environment. So we first use argon ion to do a quick sample cleaning. And if we are interested, we can use higher energy with longer times to do the depth profiling to etch the surface of the sample layer by layer and collect the data to have the information through the bulk of the sample as well. So for the third part, we talk about the peak characteristics in the X-based analysis. Each photoelectron peak reflects the district binding energies of those electrons presented in the solid. In this example, we had a molybdenum trioxide film excited by aluminum K-alpha X-ray radiation. And as you can see in the graph, there are peaks corresponding to different orbitals with different energy levels. We have, for example, moly-4p, moly-3d, moly-3p, and so on. We could also see the oxygen 1s orbital. And also, as you can see in the middle, we have a carbon 1s peak presented as well. So we had some surface contamination during the sample preparation as well. So in order to understand how to define these peak levels for the X-based analysis, we go back to the quantum mechanics. the basic nomenclature for the core level is coming by the N, L, and J values. So the N is the principal quantum number, L is the orbit angular momentum quantum number, J would be the total angular momentum quantum number, which is equal to L plus S, and S is the spin angular momentum quantum number, which is either plus or minus 1/2. So if the orbit angular momentum number, or L, is zero, we will see only one single XPS peak, which is the case, for example, for the S orbitals. But if the orbit angular momentum number is greater than zero, for like other orbitals like P, D, or F, we will have a doublet peak or a spin orbit coupling in there. So we will have two peaks for each of these P, D, or F orbitals. And how do we give a name to these peaks? First, we apply the principal quantum number. For example, for this example, we have N is equal to 2. And then we call the orbital name, and then the J value at the end of the peak. So since the spin quantum number can be either plus or minus 2, for all of those levels with L greater than 0, we have the peaks splitted into two sublevels with energy difference known as the spin orbit splitting. For example, as the graph shows, for these Mali 3D peaks, the energy difference was 3.13 electron volt. And the degeneracy of each of these levels can be counted as 2J plus 1. As the table on the right shows, for the S orbitals, the L is equal to 0, so the degeneracy is 1, so we will have only one single peak. But for other orbital levels, like P, D, or F, the L is greater than 0, so we will have different J values and different degeneracy. And the ratio of these degeneracy values are actually how the peak heights are correlated to each other. For example, for this case, for the 3D levels, we have the peak ratios of 6 to 4 or 3 to 1. So the height of these peaks would be 3 to 1. And that's how we define or do the peak fitting in the XPS analysis. So to summarize the previous slides in a simpler format, for the S orbitals, the L is equal to 0, so the degeneracy is 1, so we will have only one single peak. But for the P, D, and F orbitals, the L value is greater than 0, so we will have different degeneracy values, and the ratio of these peaks is actually equal to the ratio of the degeneracy of each of these peaks. So for the P orbital is 2 to 1, for the D orbital is 3 to 2, and for the F orbital, the peak ratio would be 4 to 3. And then these numbers are very important when we do the peak fitting in very complicated samples. So when we have photoelectrons coming out of the sample, it's actually is a function of the binding energy of that element in that specific sample. So if, for example, we have the different oxidation states, the energy level of that S orbital electron will be different. And based on that, we can find the data about the chemical states of different elements in the sample. This table shows the energy lines for the photon energies of principal shell and L shell values. They are just for the pure elements. But when an atom makes a bond with another atom, the valence electron density changes, resulting in an adjustment of the electrostatic potential affecting the core levels. So based on that simple equation, we know the energy of the X-ray beam, and we know the work function of the spectrometer. If we measure different kinetic energy values, we can find different binding energies of different elements in the sample. And If an atom loses valence charges, the binding energy increases. For example, when we go from moly to the MO2, the atom losses valence charges and the binding energy shifts to the right, as the graph also shows. In this example, we had molybdenum metal foil with some oxide on the surface. We could see the peaks of pure metal in addition to peaks corresponding to the oxide states sitting at higher level. And on the other hand, when the atom gains valence charges, the binding energy decreases. So if we go, for example, from MO3 to MO2, or from MO2 to the moly, the binding energy shifts to the left, to lower values. And as just mentioned, atoms with higher positive oxidation states show higher binding energy values. It's because extra Coulombic interaction between the photoemitted electron and the ion car. As the table shows, example for the molybdenum case, you can see that the metallic molybdenum has a binding energy of 228 electron volt for that 3D orbital. But when we go to MO2 or MO3 at the end, the energy values goes to higher and higher. Or even for the case of different chloride levels, like MO chloride 3, 4, and 5, you can see the shift in the binding energies to higher values. That's actually very important when we have complicated samples. As an example showed on the left, we had a very broad peak made of different oxidation states. So when we do the peak fitting, applying those quantum rules that we talked in the previous slides, we can see that in this case we had MO2, MO4, O11, and MO3 all presented at this at the surface of that specific sample. And we can identify these peaks and distinguish between those peaks by using the energy values available in different databases and in the literature. So for the next part, I'm going to talk about the quantitative analysis of the XPS spectrum. So the simple idea for getting the atomic concentration is to divide the peak area for each peak over the sum of the peak areas over the whole spectrum. But because different peaks of different elements have different photoionization cross-sections, we need to do some modification as well. So first we define the sensitivity factor S, which is a function of the photoionization cross-section and also the inelastic mean free pass. And what we do is basically we define the intensities by the sensitivity factors for each element. So the atomic concentration is the intensity of the peak or area of the peak divided by the sensitivity factor over the sum of the all the areas divided by sensitivity factors. So we can easily find the atomic concentration of different elements on the surface of the sample. And these sensitivity factors are available in different databases. For example, in this case, we have values for X-ray sources positioned at the angle of 54.7 degrees. And as you can see, the different elements have different sensitivity factors. Like for silver, it's almost 6, but for the aluminum, it's just 0.2 for that specific orbital line. So by using these values, we can correct our energy levels and find the right atomic concentration at the surface of the sample. So at the end, I'm going to talk quickly about the depth profiling, also as a tool being provided in most of the XPS systems. So first of all, we need to do some surface cleaning to remove any contribution from the contamination at the surface. So what we do is we use argon ion energy with energy range usually in the range of 1 to 3 kV. to just remove a small layer at the surface made of those contaminations. And beside that, we can also use these for a longer time at higher energies to collect data through the field. So we first collect the X-based spectrum, then we do the argon ion etching to remove that layer, then we collect the spectrum, then we do the sputter etching, and so on. By doing that, we can have data gathered through the whole thickness of the sample. Just to show you one example how it might be helpful in the real world. In this case, we had copper, indium, gallium, diselenide solar cells deposited on the ITO substrates. So the left plot shows the elemental distribution through the film. As you can see, all the elements were quite uniform through the film until reaching at the interface. So at the interface, we could see the gallium, in this case, the blue line, going to higher and higher values. So it's showing that we had the gallium accumulation at the interface. At the same time, the copper was also diffused through the ITO layer. Copper is a black line in this case, because of the high temperature deposition of these copper, indium, gallium diselenide films on the ITO. So we can not only see the elemental distribution, but we can also have some idea about the chemical states of those, as we talked in the previous slides. When we look at the gallium 3D peaks at a higher resolution, we could see that we had just one single peak until reaching the interface. At the interface, we have a second peak or shoulder appearing beside the main peak. And when we do the peak feeding for these peaks, we could find that this secondary peak corresponds to the gallium oxide phase. And it will have a huge effect on the electronic properties at the interface. So in that matter, XPS is the only unique way to characterize the interface properties for to get some info about some chemical states as well as the elemental distribution through the field. So to summarize the XPS analysis, first of all, we need to have an ultra-high vacuum level range. But because of that, we need some sample compatibility with ultra-high vacuum environment. It might be an issue for some biological samples, for example. The XPS sensitivity is very surface limited, so we can only analyze a few nanometers at the surface. And we can have the data about all elements except hydrogen and helium. The detection limit is typically around 0.1 atomic percent, which is a reasonable value. And the typical smallest analytical area is only a few micrometer that we can analyze. And all type of materials, metals, organics, inorganics, can be used in the XPS analysis as long as they are compatible with the ultra-high vacuum environment. And this slide also shows some online sources that can be used to understand the XPS properties further and also to have some info about the different databases available online that can be used for the quantitative analysis. Thank you for your attention.